hundreds of elvens that surrounded me. The air smelled of fresh brown dirt, organic plants, and the oil of weapons. We had walked for 3/4 of an hour, and the trail began to dip down into the moving creek before rising up the other side. The entourage moved through the water, and I noticed that there were many more elvens positioned high in the trees surrounding us. These warriors were camouflaged with leaves and mud, and carried composite longbows. The Empress was not taking any chances with my exile, and did not think that the hundreds of warriors already surrounding me were enough to ensure my departure. "What if I find a way back to this world?" I asked, after we crossed the surprisingly refreshing creek and began to climb the steep trail on the other side. "You won't," Fehalda said curtly. "I just need an ovule. From my understanding, they are prized, but most clans have them. Won't I be able to find or steal one?" "No, Kyair," Viernine spoke softly from her position to my right side. "You won't find another ovule." She avoided looking at me. "You know I am relentless. I will return here. I wish you no harm. I just want to live in peace. If I return, will the Empress attempt to send me back?" The hair on the back of my neck was standing on end, and my gut was screaming to me that something was wrong. I was alone in the wilderness with hundreds, perhaps thousands of elvens that wanted me banished from this world, or dead. "You will not return," Fehalda repeated. "So you intend to kill me?" "No," Viernine said. "The Empress is going to send you through the Radical, as she said she would." Then I realized what was really going to happen. Anger drove my vision black, and my jaw clenched so firmly that I felt my teeth scrape through my skull. I didn't want to believe what I guessed, but there was no other explanation for Viernine's odd answers. The woman was normally cold to me, but the change in her body language and tone was apparent. She was not happy with this situation, and neither was Fehalda. They were going to do what Malik and my friends once did to me. They intended to manipulate the Radical, like my daughter had thousands of years ago. Talaxthi would send me through into the stasis, and I would never be awakened unless someone knew my name and the procedure for waking my unconscious mind. I would never be able to return to this world, or any world for that matter. This was the purest form of exile that would guarantee I could never be a loose end for Talaxthi. She would not have to worry about me returning, advising her daughter, or thwarting her plans with Jesme. I took a long breath and tried to force down my anger. I meant my words of alliance with the Empress sincerely. While I could acknowledge that I represented a deadly risk to her people, I also saved the woman's life and thought we had reached some understanding. The leader of the elven people was one step ahead of me again. There was no way out of this. There were archers in the trees, and hundreds of weapon-carrying elven warriors on all sides of me, even if I could harness my magic and incinerate a good deal of them. There were too many to escape. Maybe it was better to die here than be lost for another millennium. Would I float through the clouds again? Could I chase the birds and the distant colored ships that swam through the blue skies? Maybe I would find peace with the floating islands of my dreams. What were the chances that Nadia could find out my daughter's name and how to bring her back, if she even lived? My body had been so weak when Nadia and Pog pulled me from my sleep, there was a chance I would have perished from lack of nourishment in another few years. I loved Shlara, and I killed her. I loved Iola Rothi, and she was dead because of me. I loved Jesme and Nadia as well. Would they suffer an early end because of my involvement in their lives? Everything I touched turned to death. Perhaps the skull armor really did exist under my skin. Maybe the incarnation of death, demons, and hell was my actual self, and the human face I wore now was the lie. This had been my final battle, and I had lost. It was time to surrender. "The radical," Viernine said, and I looked to where she pointed. The creek had turned into a wide river, and a few hundred yards ahead the trail bent down to the shore of the roaring blue rapids. The green spiral column seemed to fight against the branches of the surrounding trees to push free of the shore of the river. Green leaves, ivy, and thick branches covered almost every part of its stone surface, and I could easily understand how the temple remained undiscovered by Naya's own people. At the entrance to the radical, the Empress and Disanti stood with 100 more elven warriors. They looked up, and I made eye contact with Talaxthi. The expression on her face was exactly as I would have predicted. She must have determined that I knew her plan. "Welcome, Kaer." She smiled when I stepped before her, but there was no glee in the expression. "I understand why you want to do this." I took a deep breath and did my best to keep the panic from my voice. "Is there anything I can say to change your mind? I would agree with your earlier terms." "There is no changing my mind, Destroyer." She nodded, and the ranks of guards closed in on me. "Explain why the circumstances of my acceptance are so different now. I can still give you what you want." One of the guards laid a hand on my back, and the group began to move forward into the cool depths of the spiraling temple. "Before I could be certain of your sincerity, I believed that you would have played your role and not betrayed me. I was in the weaker position to negotiate with you, and I was looking for you to cement our alliance. Now it is apparent you are accepting my offer only to save yourself, and I know you will seek ways to undermine me in the future." She turned to face me while we walked. "I wish it were otherwise, Kaer, but this is the best solution for my people." "You beat me, Talaxthi," I said with a sigh. "I admit defeat at your hands. You've conquered this world, and I have nothing but the hope that you will treat the humans here differently than my elven masters did." Talaxthi raised an eyebrow at my words, but didn't say anything. "Can I not ask for mercy? I know what you intend for me, and there is little I can do to stop you now. Send me to another world instead. Perhaps I can find my purpose somewhere else." The bottom floor of the temple was devoid of the usual stone beds, but a shallow staircase on the far side of the giant room led into the depths of the earth. There were more elven warriors on this level, and they looked prepared to battle me. "No, you are too dangerous. You don't even know your own power. You almost destroyed my people, and then did the same to your own when they tried to execute you for your crimes." She shook her head, and the group descended the stairs. "Destroyed my own people?" She didn't bother to answer me. We had reached the bottom of the stairs. There were 20 of the strange stone beds arranged in a circle around the dais. Half of the space was filled with the armored bodies of elven warriors, and I almost laughed at the idiocy of it all. Even if I tried to resist here, there were too many in the small space for anyone to fight effectively. But perhaps that was the Empress's strategy. If I did not have space to move or flee, then I could not escape into the wilderness. Even if she lost 100 more warriors to me in this shrine, the woman believed almost anything was worth being rid of me. Lie on that platform. The Empress pointed at the stone bed on the other side of the room. My head was beginning to ache again. Please reconsider, Talaxthi. I gave a last plea, but I knew it wouldn't matter. The Empress was past reconciliation, and my fate would end here. I deserved it. Even if I had lived a blameless life and killed no one, betrayed no one, I had taken more than my share of time and lived longer than any human was meant to. The platform, she commanded again. It took me a few steps to reach the bed, and the feel of the cold stone was much more soothing than it should have been. Malik would have laughed at the irony of this situation. I turned my head and saw Dissanti give Talaxthi the ovule. The strange globe looked dead in her hands, but when she moved to place it on the dais, the glow of its etchings pulsed weakly. Seeding from 4877638, Dissanti said, when the Empress placed the globe in the dais. What does that number mean? My body tensed, and every muscle screamed. The number sounded familiar. I had heard it before, a long time ago, when I was searching for Iola Rothi. It is the location of this world and Radical, Dissanti explained. Is the last number the Radical? My blood surged, and I began to shake. I remembered the old elven that had first explained how the strange devices worked. The last two. Stop! I sat up, and the gathered elvens drew their weapons with a deafening scrape of steel. Sent the human across the void to Seed World 4877639. The old elven's words slammed into my memory like a punch from Thayer. She was on this world. My daughter was locked behind the doors of a different Radical. She was sent to this world, I screamed again, and moved to get off of the platform. This changed everything. If my daughter was on this world, I just needed her name. Then I needed to find Radical 3-9, and I could pull her from the abyss. I don't care, Talaxthi's voice echoed my cry. Something pierced my back, and I screamed with surprise. The point of a blade stuck out of my chest. Pain seared through my body, along with intense exhaustion. The blade pulled from my back, and I felt the cool embrace of the stone bed. No! Blood filled my mouth, choking off my last plea. The light from the ovule was glowing brighter than the sun, and I felt the strange magic course through the stone and my bleeding body. My vision began to blacken, and I tried to reach up a hand to stop the Empress. She was across the room, and my body felt like it weighed more than all of the stone beds put together. I could not stop her. I was so close to my daughter, but now she would be lost to me forever. I screamed again with the last of my strength. The glow of the ovule filled my eyes until there was nothing else but its endless light and my outstretched arm. The limb was covered in my skull armor. Their mouths opened to screech in unison with my own pain.
Chapter 39. Iola Rothi.
I miss Valyata,
the girl sighed from behind me. You've said that already. I glanced back over my shoulder.
Not today, I haven't.
She stuck her tongue out, and I fought to keep the smile from my lips.
You also haven't told me that you miss Nyarathi, or Siltia, or Winrathi, either. I miss them as well. Although Dead Flats is a shithole. They should all move into the valley with Valyata's people.
Where did you learn that word?
What word?
She skipped up a few steps and grasped my hand in her smaller one. Once it had been only big enough to wrap around a single one of my fingers, but she was no longer a baby. Shithole.
You just said it. She smiled, and it reminded me of Kair so much that I had to look away.
No, you said it first, and then I asked you where you learned of the word.
Do you agree with me that it was a shithole?
She squeezed my hand and swung her arms together.
Yes.
I couldn't help but laugh. But Nyarathi has an important job, and Dead Flats is the best place for her to do it.
Then it doesn't matter where I learned the word.
She swung her arms in cadence with our walk, and her smile grew even larger. She smelled like Kair. Smoke, lavender, and rich oils. When we lay together in our campground at night, I would often push my head against the nape of the girl's neck and inhale the scent of her hair until I fell asleep. It helped keep the nightmares of dragons away. Your hood is coming off. I thought about fixing it for her, but she hated it when I did that.
There is a clearing up ahead.
She pointed up the trail. Sure enough, there was a break in the jungle canopy that exposed our path on the side of the mountain. The sun hung to the west, and the 200 yards of barren trail was clearly illuminated. It would be visible for many miles. Then make sure your hood is up.
But, she frowned, you know the rules.
I interrupted what I guessed she was going to say with a shake of my head. Stand to my side, so if someone happens to be looking, they will just see me alone. She nodded and moved to the inside of the mountain path. Vyarathi was more than skilled at moving through the wilderness, and while I almost never left a trace of my presence, the girl might as well have been the wind. She could walk across a field of long grass, and there would be no mark of her passing. If our luck ran out, and the Obarni ever caught us, I wanted her to have the greatest chance of escape I could give her. We approached the clearing, and I tasted the heat of the sun on the side of the mountain. Butterflies spun through the air, and the untamed scent of wildflowers accompanied the thick, earthy fragrance of the humid jungle. I reached up to check my own hood out of habit, but it was in place. "Stay in my shadow," I warned her, and then we walked through the sun with our heads bowed. We made it about halfway across the sunny gap when Vyarathi made a sudden move toward me. I spun my head around, thinking that perhaps she smelled something that I didn't or noticed movement. I realized she was grabbing for my hood. The girl was fast, and I gasped with surprise when she knocked my cowl from my head. "Damn it, Vyarathi!" I knocked her hands away, but it was too late. My hair was exposed, and now any Obarni within 30 miles of us could have seen the shine of the sun reflecting off of my red mane. I pulled the hood back in its place with another curse. Then I grabbed the girl's arm and dragged her forward into the shade of the tree. "Why did you do that?" I tried to keep from screaming at her. I could taste the rotting fear in the air, and it took me a second to realize that it was my own.
"You are hurting my arm, Mother."
She winced and looked down at my right hand.
"You know the rules. What were you thinking?"
I tightened my grip on her. I was shaking now, and I felt tears sting my eyes. How many Obarni saw us? How soon would they be on this mountain range? Did the dragons see us? I thought we had a good lead on our pursuers, but that could have all been lost now.
"I wanted him to see you."
Her bottom lip quivered a bit.
"He's dead."
My left hand lashed out before I could even think and struck the girl across her beautiful face.
"They killed him, and they want to do the same to us. How many times do I need to explain this to you?" "He's not dead. He saw you. We just need to wait for him. Please, Mother."
Her eyes gushed tears, and she sobbed. I doubted I had really hurt her, but she was probably as surprised as I was that I slapped her. "No, Vyarathi. Your father was supposed to meet me. I waited for him. I waited months for him. The only ones that showed were the people who are trying to kill us. They have never stopped chasing us. If he was alive, he would have met me when he promised." I hated saying the words, but I also hated that my daughter kept telling me that he was still alive.
"You hit me."
She reached up with her right hand and touched the spot on her cheek. The red mark had already faded, and I doubt she felt anything but the memory. "You put us in danger, and you keep speaking of your father." Her teary green eyes told me that she didn't think my explanation justified the blow. Her scent hardly ever changed, so I had become much better at reading facial expressions since the wonderful girl came into my life.
I am frustrated, daughter. Continue walking. I have to figure out how to shake our pursuers now that you have revealed us to them. I tugged on her arm, and the girl bowed her head before she fell in step next to me.
Don't you miss him?
She said after a few painful minutes of silence passed between the two of us. The question sparked the flame of emotions in my chest, and I gritted my teeth to keep them bottled. I swore to the damn dead gods that if I did not love this girl so much, I would have killed her 300 times since she was born. She seemed to know exactly what to say to anger me and distract me from my goal of keeping us alive.
Yes, but I have you, so I am thankful.
I smiled at her and hoped that she could not feel the pain I was trying to protect her from. I wanted her to know more about her father, but discussing him was so painful I hardly ever allowed it.
He misses you, too.
He doesn't know about me, she said sadly.
Damn it, Viarathi. Just stop talking about him, please.
I wiped my eyes with my fingers and sighed. Help me figure out how to escape the hunters that follow us.
They are following him now.
She shook her head.
We really should wait.
She caught my glare and stopped mid-sentence. Then the girl pursed her lips and clasped her hands together.
Maybe the next radical will have an ovule. Then we can be gone from this world.
She smiled back up at me and batted her long eyelashes. The simple movement washed away the sadness in my chest, and I found myself returning the grin. That would be wonderful. Nyarathi scouts think the entrance to the caverns below this mountain is along this trail.
What kind of worlds do you think we can journey to?
It was a conversation we had multiple times a day, but I never grew tired of dreaming with her.
Maybe one that will be just like this, only without humans.
I smiled.
But some of them are good.
Not the ones that follow us.
Those are a Barney. Some of them are good. Some of them are not, just like humans.
She nodded as if she had just told me that the sky was blue and the moon was green. All of them want to kill us, so I will conclude that they are not good.
Am I human, or Barney, or elven?
She had never asked this question, so I paused for a few seconds to think of an answer that was close enough to the truth.
Which would you prefer to be?
Elven? She smiled so wide that her green eyes closed with the effort. Why? I wanted to keep her talking while I focused on reaching our destination. O'Barney were the most obvious threat that my daughter knew of, but I was more frightened of the monster I made a deal with those many years ago. I did not know where the dragon lurked, but I knew she hunted me as well. If we reached the cave in time, I doubted that she would be able to follow.
We are a kind people, and help each other.
It wasn't always that way.
Oh, I know. You told me before that we used to be mean. But that isn't the case any longer.
She inhaled and seemed distracted for a second.
There's a mango tree over there. She pointed up the slope. And it has a beehive in it. We should get some mangoes and honey.
We don't have time. I sighed when her face fell. I almost pointed out that the reason we needed to hurry was that she had pulled down my hood. But I realized that I had made that point clear enough when I slapped her. Once we travel to the other world, we will have plenty of time for collecting honey. Remember how we slept in my old cottage in Rilyaro's Valley?
Yes. She smiled again. Will we have orchards and a garden in our new home?
Yes, just like that place. We will find a home next to the river so we can fish and raise livestock. There will be plenty of time for collecting honey. She tightened her grip on my hand with excitement, but then she lost her smile.
Will there be other children there? Boys and girls my age?
It depends.
On what?
There might not even be humans or elves on the new world.
Can't we choose? We should only go to a place where we can make friends.
They might not want to be our friends. I laughed lightly at her words.
Everyone wants to be my friend, Mother. Remember those human children? They loved me.
Oh, yes, I remember them. Do you recall how angry I was with you? It had been 5 or 6 years ago, and we were camped on the outskirts of a human settlement of a few thousand. I was planning a way to steal supplies and perhaps take a hostage to extract news, but Viarathi slipped away. I found her after a frantic half-hour of search, playing with a group of human children. There were no adults around, so I was able to avoid killing anyone.
It was worth it, though. You never obeyed your parents.
She stuck her tongue out at me, and I didn't know if I should get angry or laugh at her. Who told you I never obeyed my parents?
Nyarathi. Then I asked Valyara, and she confirmed.
Her smile was so smug that I did indeed laugh. Surely the dead gods were paying me back for the trouble I gave my parents. My parents were fools. I hope you don't think the same of me.
No, of course not, Mother.
A smile fell from her lips, and she looked pensive.
I do wish you would listen to me about no more today, Vyarathi.
I growled at her. I don't want to hear you speak any more of him. Just give me today, please. Your stunt with my hood has created a dangerous situation, and you should be thankful I am not angrier with you.
Fine.
She spat the word and then looked away. I knew she was mad at me, but I was displeased with her as well. She still maintained the grip of our locked fingers, so I suspected that she was not very upset. I let her walk in silence for another hour before we came to a deep stream that cut across the path. Here we refilled our water skins, drank until our stomachs were full, and then ate the last of our rations from Rilyara. The salted meat and dried fruit had lasted us for many more months than I expected, but we had been lucky with hunting. Perhaps fortune wasn't entirely to blame. Vyarathi had become a skilled hunter over the years, and the last boar I watched her hunt was killed with a single throw of the spear I lent her. We had feasted that night and done our best to smoke more of the meat for a few days before we continued on our journey.
"May I see the map?"
she asked after we finished eating. I was packing up the remainder of my supplies and debated the strategy of following the stream upward to thwart our attackers. I left little evidence of my passing, but I knew the Obarni were only sending their best trackers after me. They did not seem to have sensitive noses, so I often bought us time by taking rivers, climbing trees, or pushing through storms. Here. I unfolded the thick parchment that Rilyara gave us and handed it to Vyarathi.
I wonder if this creek leads to the entrance. Look at the lines.
She pointed to the detailed drawing that Rilyara's scouts provided.
If the water continues to cut into the mountain, it may be right at the entrance. See how the trail bends around?
I nodded at her observations of the map and studied our surroundings.
Even if I am wrong, we will probably only be a few hundred feet away. If we stay in the water, then we will be harder to track,
she continued, and I could tell that she was seeking my approval. I agree with your assessment. Good job, daughter. She tried to hide her smile. I will let you lead us, then. Are you up for the task?
Yes, Mother.
She hastily folded up the map and handed it back to me. I put the paper back in its correct place, and then finished strapping everything else into the sack. Take the spear as a walking stick. I handed her the weapon and looked for an appropriate length of wood that I could use. After a few feet of wading through the stream behind Vyarathi, I found a thick piece of jungle driftwood.
Do you think that there are sharks in the water?
She whispered over her shoulder after we hit a deep part of the river that brought the water up to her chest. Maybe just small ones. I would be more worried about water vipers.
I am not concerned. I just want to see a shark. Siltia and Wenrathi had a drawing in one of their books.
Nyarathi's children had spent many precious days with Vyarathi. They had grown close, and their friendship, as well as being reunited with my sister again, made our departure difficult. Careful of the water ahead. It is moving quicker and appears to be deeper, I cautioned.
I am fine, Mother.
She blew a stream of water out of her mouth with a playful smile.
The air was hot and humid,
but the chill water was melted snow from the top of the mountain range. We tried to keep as dry as possible when we traveled to preserve our clothes, but the refreshing dip felt wonderful. Vyarathi was swimming now, but the water only came up to my neck. A waterfall cascaded into the river ahead, and before I could advise my daughter on the correct method of climbing the boulders that made up the waterfall, she sprung from the current, landing lightly on the top of the falls. The leap was over 30 feet, and I closed my open mouth before she could turn back and smile at me in triumph. I may have been able to make that kind of a leap if I had started on solid ground, but she had been floating moments before attempting the jump.
It was as if the water itself flung her gently from its embrace. She sat down on the edge of the falls and waited for me to climb the face. The sides of the creek were cut like a gorge now, and though the sky above us was open, I didn't believe there would be much of a risk of the dragon finding us unless she swooped directly overhead. That only left me the O'Barney to worry about until we reached the radical. "Do you hear anything?" I asked her when I reached the top of the falls.
"Just the creatures of the jungle."
She shrugged her shoulders, and I adjusted the lay of her hood on her auburn hair. Her movement reminded me of Kyaer. And for a few brief seconds, I allowed myself to hope that the girl was right in her predictions that her father was still alive.
"Would you call this a pool, a pond, or a lake?"
She gestured behind her to the standing body of water that dammed up before the falls.
"A big pool or a small pond. Lakes are much larger," I confirmed. "We should walk around it."
"We'll have to swim. There are no trails to the sides." The pool was cut like a deep bowl into the stone basin of the jungle floor.
"I will go first."
Fiorathi jumped into the water with the spear in her hand. I followed after her and focused on the mouth of the small river that fed the pool about 200 yards in the distance. The pond was surprisingly deep, but the water was clear, and I could see 10 feet through the blue depths. This place was peaceful, and if our situation were different, I would have enjoyed camping here for a few weeks. With a supply of fresh water, the jungle fruits, and the plentiful amount of small game here, we could have lived quite happily. I had considered someplace cooler for our new homestead on whatever world we would inhabit, but perhaps a tropical setting such as this jungle would be more fun. Something moved under the current of the pool beneath Fiorathi. It was large, long, and swam in a sideways motion like a snake. My daughter was focused on the end of the pool, and while she swam with long, powerful strokes that quickly carried her skipping across the surface of the water, the large creature under her was faster, and I could see it twist toward her. "Beneath you!" I screamed out a warning, but the girl choked and then disappeared under the water before she heard me. I called her name and then dove under the water with a curse. I didn't know what the creature was, but I guessed it was much too large for my daughter to wrestle with while underwater. If the thing had teeth, it was possible that it bit her and was dragging her deep into the depths of the pool. I could see nothing through the blood. I kicked hard and swam to her. My mind spun with terror. She was dead, or soon would be. There was too much blood. The creature struggled beneath me. It was a water viper. They normally grew to 4 feet in length, but this one was easily 20, and the reptile's body was as thick as my own chest. The bottom half of its tail coiled around my daughter's small torso, and its maw was positioned only a few feet over the top of her head. My spear was trapped between her hip and the monster, so Fiorathi could not bring the weapon into play. The only thing preventing the creature from ripping her beautiful head from her shoulders was her one tiny arm pushing its nose away. I had a short bow latched to my pack, but it would be useless under the water. I did have a long dagger at my hip, so I pulled it free and dove into the scales, where it wrapped around the girl. The blade punched deep, and I was able to yank it vertically to ensure the deepest of cuts. Most animals gave up as soon as they encountered any sort of resistance from their prey, but this monster only seemed to tighten its constriction around Fiorathi in response to my attack. I cut again and again with the blade, but the fucking beast wouldn't let go of her. It spun in the water, and I lost my hold on the dagger buried in its flesh. The water was so thick and red now that I couldn't see anything in front of me, and my panicked attempts to keep up with the twisting pair grew even more frantic. I was lost and floating down in an endless sea of crimson. The twists and thrashing of the water stopped suddenly, and I couldn't figure out where they were in the opaque depths. I was running out of air. Fiorathi had smaller lungs and had likely taken a shallower breath. If she was not bleeding out, she was drowning. I almost screamed into the water. The dead gods were cruel to take her from me when we were so close to our freedom. I had protected her from O'Barney killers, the unyielding hate of the environment, and the most diabolical creature in all of creation. Yet this was how she would pass from this world. I should have taken the lead. It should have been me locked in the deathly coil of the monster while she swam to freedom. A hand gripped my shoulder and pulled me. I saw my daughter's smiling face underwater. I almost gasped with relief. We surfaced from the bloody pool with a symphonic pair of relieved sighs. Are you okay? The water was a muddy red, and I could not see any part of her body that was submerged.
I tried to tell him that we weren't food, but he didn't listen.
She was gasping for breath, and I wrapped my arms around her while we treaded water. Are you injured? I realized my voice was halfway between a panicked scream and an insane screech, so I forced myself to relax. If the girl was talking and treading water, she was probably going to be fine. Unless the viper got its poison into her.
He bit me to pull me down, but I'm okay now.
She pushed away from me and kicked toward our previous destination. I noticed she held something long and ivory in her left hand, but I couldn't clearly see what it was until we escaped the dizzying scent of the coppery blood. Is that the monster's fang? It was curved and more than 3 feet in length.
He wouldn't let go, Mother.
She sighed and wiped some bloody snot from her nose. I couldn't tell visually if the blood came from her or was just left over from the serpent, but a quick flick of my tongue confirmed it was the creature's. You ripped its fang out? She sat on the smooth, rocky shore of the stream, and I moved my hands over her legs. I found the place where the monster bit her, but the ripped deerskin pants were the only proof of the assault. Her white skin underneath was perfectly healed. I wrapped my arms around her and held her tightly for a few seconds. She pushed away, irritated and too excited to stay still in my arms.
Yes, but he still wouldn't let go. So I had to stab him in the eye.
She held it up in her small hand to show me the fang, and I realized that a part of it was broken off at the tip.
The poor thing is dead now. We should have climbed the side walls of the pool.
I am just relieved you are okay. Did you feel poisoned? Viper venom from a normal-sized snake would be enough to render one of my kind unconscious for a day, but it would not have the same potency in my own body. However, I understood very little of Vyarathi's powers, and the giant monster might have delivered its toxin in a dose too large for her small body to handle.
I need to drink a few skins of water, but other than that I feel fine, just thirsty.
The disappointment on her face from the death of the monster was replaced by a smile when I voiced my concern. I passed her my water skin, and she drank it all before we filled it up again.
I lost the spear in the water.
She frowned after she returned the skin. No matter, we'll craft a new one once we reach our destination. There is a branch behind you that looks to be the correct size.
We are almost there, Mother. I can feel the presence of the radical.
She pointed up ahead and sprang to her feet like a playful kitten. Then she grabbed the new walking stick and waded into the moving water. I will lead for now. I took the point position and guided us through the currents and cuts of the deep stream for another 2 hours.
Mother, look!
Vyarathi said from behind me, and I glanced back at her and then followed her finger to a cave in the side of the canyon. The cave reminded me of the one I had entered 13 years ago to make the deal with the Rikatalosti Katri and her diabolical brood. It was carved like the jaw of some beast that lay in wait to devour any foolish enough to pass.
There is the trail.
I saw the narrow path that descended the steep canyon face above the stream. The cave was 40 feet above us, but still 10 feet below the trail. If a traveler did not know the opening was there, it would have been easy to miss. Let's climb. I checked the straps on my pack and then did the same for Vyarathi. I let the girl ascend first, in case her wet hands slipped on the rocks. I was used to worrying about her, but a few seconds of watching her climb made me feel foolish. She ascended like a squirrel up an oak tree, and reached the mouth of the cave before I even got my boots out of the cool water.
I feel good about this one. It is different.
She offered me her hand when I reached the top, and I grasped it, even though I did not need her assistance. It made her happy when she believed she helped me. What is different?
It tastes strong.
She licked her lips, and I repeated her movement with my own tongue. I tasted the water, damp jungle air, dust from the cave, and the clay mixed with granite. I'll choose to believe you. I forced a smile to my lips. This was the last radical on the map Relyara and Nayarathi had put together for me. I needed one of the small orbs that powered the temple, but I had been unable to find one yet. I knew that the Obarni had captured a few and their looting of my race's tribal lands, but I did not want to risk stealing one until I had exhausted all our other options. This was our last hope, and I prayed that my daughter was correct.
"I'll make the light,"
she whispered, but could not hide the excitement in her voice. The flame appeared in her hand, a faint shade of white mixed with violet. We were still at the mouth of the cave, but the extra illumination allowed me to see that the path into the cave bent down at an angle that reminded me more of the dragon's lair.
"How far do you feel it is?"
I tried not to rely too much on the girl's odd predictions, and she could not explain to me how she made them. Yet she was often correct.
"It is far, deep down in the heart. That is why there is still an ovule."
I nodded and tried not to share her excitement. I could not stand being disappointed again. "We ate the last of our rations." I gritted my teeth and wondered how far of a descent this would be. I didn't want to waste time gathering food or hunting when our goal was so close, especially after she had pulled down my hood and alerted every nearby enemy of our presence. We had little time to spare.
"We should hunt and spend a night smoking what we catch. When we go through the radical to our new home, we might need extra provisions."
She nodded her head and took steps back to the edge of the cave mouth. "No, Vyarathi, we don't have time. Our water should last us a few days, if we can serve it. We will fast until we reach the radical, and then settle with what we can eat in the new world."
"Ugh," she sighed. "I was afraid you would say that."
She wiggled her lips and then spoke again.
"You wouldn't believe me if I said that we have enough time?"
"No." I forced a smile to my mouth, but the word was firm enough to let her know that I wouldn't tolerate any of the girl's arguments. She turned away from the ledge and walked deeper into the cave. Her boot steps were squishy from our swim, and I almost changed my mind about my daughter's recommendation. Dry clothes and a satchel full of smoked fish or monkey would make the last part of our long journey more enjoyable. Vyarathi led me down the deep cave for a few hundred yards before pulling the hood down from her head and shaking her wet hair loose. I followed her example, and we both used magic to conjure small flames to our hands. Mine glowed a faint orange, but Vyarathi's was white, with a pulsing purple current at its base.
"The ground is smoother here. I'm going to take my clothes off so that they will dry,"
she called over her shoulder while she tugged her pack straps loose. "We are still close to the entrance. I'd prefer we keep them on in case they track us here."
"They won't, but even if they do, we will hear them coming from far away. This place echoes."
She smiled at me while she pulled her clothes off and then draped them over her pack. Once she was naked, she tied her boots to the latches of the leather kit and slung it back over her shoulders. Then we continued onward. After another hour, I asked the girl to stop so that I could do the same with my clothes. What I wanted almost as much as an escape through the radical was a place to wash our garments with soap. Thoughts of laundry made my imagination wander to the idea of a bath, and my mind floated away thinking about such a luxury. I had always wanted to take a bath with Kair, but it would have been too dangerous to sneak him into my bedchambers. Now that the man was dead, I would never have the chance. But even a bath alone with a tub full of soapy water seemed more than a divine experience. Even if we did escape through this radical, there was no way to know what the next world would be like. I hoped we could find a relatively uninhabited planet, which would keep us safer, but also mean that it would take years to establish a home where I could enjoy any of the luxuries I had grown up with. I wondered if Vyarathi was lucky, and that she had never grown accustomed to comfort. She only knew this life, and seemed content enough, though she enjoyed fantasizing about our new home as much as I did.
"Do you think this radical was built in the depths of this cave, or did the earth just swallow it up one day?"
Vyarathi asked. "I don't know, daughter. Does it even matter?" When she had first started talking a few months after she was born, the babe had bothered me with all sorts of useless questions. But as the years passed, I learned to appreciate her ability to distract me from the drudgery of travel.
"Sure it does. I wonder who built these places and who used them. If what Nyarathi believes is correct, then the dead gods crafted them for the ancient humans. But why would this one be so far removed from the sunlight?"
"Maybe it was a strategic decision to make the place harder to find."
But Reldiara said that the gods made these places well before the humans decided to attack. They wanted the humans to use them. Perhaps during the war, the earth was moved and swallowed up this place. We both slid down a steep section of rock on our bare feet, but easily regained our balance when it flattened out. I tasted the distant scent of water and felt some of my concerns relax. If there was a creek or river down here, we would not have to worry about drinking, and there might be fish or crayfish to catch. That was what I think happened, Mother. She had a big smile on her face, obviously pleased that I agreed with her. I think the mountain was moved during the war and swallowed up this radical. Well, the ancients were said to be powerful. I nodded. Is that why the gods created the dragons?
Do not ever speak of those creatures.
I seethed the words. Sorry. She pouted after a few moments. I have told you before. I said I was sorry. I got excited.
She sniffed slightly, but I did not think the girl was crying. I left the conversation alone after our exchange, and we didn't speak for another few hours. The path of the cave continued to take us deeper into the tropical mountain, and we did eventually come to a stream that was 7 feet across and just as deep. By then our clothes were dry, but we left them off, and I swam across first before Vyarathi tossed me our packs.
How much further?
I doubted that she knew exactly how much more distance we needed to cover, but I had grown frustrated by her silence, and I knew she would be happy if I asked her opinion.
It is still far away, Mother.
She pursed her lips.
Let us rest here for the night.
It was past evening, but the absence of the sun or wind was disorienting.
I'll set up our bedrolls.
She got to work on the campsite while I removed a small mesh net from my pack and set it up at one of the bends in the river. By the time Vyarathi finished with our bedrolls, my trap had caught 4 small fish. They were ugly things, devoid of eyes, and possessing strange tentacles around their toothy mouths. But we roasted them over our hands with our fire, and they tasted delicious. When we awoke from our slumber, we drank deeply from the river, donned our clothes, filled up our skins again, and then continued deep into the darkness of the earth. By now, I had lost track of how many hours we traveled, but as soon as I began to feel tired from our endless spelunking, I noticed a change in the scent of the air.
We are close, Mother.
I nodded, and we increased our pace. The cave walls had become oppressively close at some points, and we had to descend in a single file, but as the air took on a more organic scent, the cavern widened, and massive tree roots pushed through the rock of the ceiling. There was a glow ahead. It was a deep green, and my nose filled with the flavors of vines, dirt, and honeysuckle. I could hear the excited heartbeat of my daughter. I heard something else, another beat that knocked slowly from the origin of the distant glow. There is someone else in the radical. I will lead. I commanded Vyarathi, and she nodded before falling in place behind me. We continued the last 200 yards, and then came upon the ruin of the radical. It was spiraled, as the others we had encountered, but this one did look tilted, and the top portion was broken apart by the rock of the cave. Or maybe the tower passed through the ceiling like a skewer? It seemed that Vyarathi's prediction was correct. The earth had attempted to swallow this radical. The green glow flowed out of the windows of the tower like fog, and it carried even richer scents of life and honey. I drew the short bow off of my back and slid 4 arrows between the fingers of my right hand so that I could quickly fire them. I was sure that there was someone alive inside the shrine, and the pulsing of their heart was unlike anything I had ever heard. Hello? I called out toward the ruin. I didn't expect an answer from whoever occupied the large structure, but my voice was more than loud enough to carry into its depths. I heard movement inside. The slow shuffle of feet and the soft dragging sound of cloth across tile. Someone moved through the ruined tower toward us.
Greetings, an old voice called out from inside the green stone spiral.
It was a man's timbre, and shortly I saw his ancient form creep out of the entrance. Who are you? The elven looked older than any I ever recollected seeing. I had heard legends of our kin being able to extend their lives past the 500 years that were the norm, but I always doubted the truth of these rumors.
This man proved me wrong, for he must have been many thousands of years old, and looked like his flesh was cut from the same stone as the radical.
I am the caretaker of this radical. Do you seek passage to a seed?
Seed? Viarathi asked.
Yes, mistress. Another world.
His voice was like gravel being shaken in a sealed barrel of honey. I could not even smell his emotions on the air. He blended in perfectly with this place. We were told we need an ovule to use the radical, I said.
Yes, single-born. There is an ovule here.
He nodded. How did you know I was a single-born? Perhaps I should have been cautious, but my emotions swirled about my stomach like butterflies.
I can sense your power, child.
Can you show us how to use the ovule in the radical? We wish to leave this world,
Viarathi said, before I could ask the old shell how he could possibly sense my power.
Of course. That is my role here. I am surprised you do not know that, mistress.
He bobbed his graying head, and I noticed that his long pewter hair did not sway with the movement. He turned his back to us and slowly shuffled into the dilapidated temple.
The ovule is in the radical's heart. This way, please.
We moved through a few empty rooms, and then came upon the familiar pedestal. On the stone dais sat a polished metal ball that matched the description Niarathi had given us. The orb filled the place with the scent of dozens of flowers mixed with coppery blood. I could almost taste the power seeping from the small etchings on its smooth surface.
How does it work?
Viarathi's voice was filled with excitement, and I could actually smell her delight.
Place your hand upon it as such.
The elven did so, and the glow in the room darkened a few seconds, before yellow lines of light sprang to life along the smooth walls around us.
These dots are worlds that have been seeded.
His voice stuttered between the words. It seemed as if the old fossil was about to fall asleep where he stood.
It looks like some radicals can only send us specific worlds, Viarathi stated.
Why do you say that? I asked her.
Look how the lines flow to the dots. I can see hundreds of others that are not illuminated.
I followed her finger and noticed the same on the wall. There were 52 spots lit on the walls, but almost four times that many were not glowing.
She is correct.
The man nodded, and I heard his neck creak like an ancient oak tree. I studied the walls again and paid closer attention to the lines and intersections. It was a spider web of chaos, but after a few minutes of examination, I pointed to one of the dots at a far corner. This place has only two lines leading to it. All the others have at least six. Does that mean that this world is only accessed through two other worlds?
Yes, single-born,
the old one confirmed. Tell me of this world.
If you place your hand on the ovule and focus on the dot, then you will be told of its mysteries.
Like this?
Viarathi had already moved next to the ancient elven and placed her hands on the smooth orb. The lights on the wall pulsed and spun. The old Shreve stepped back away from my daughter, and his eyes opened wide with surprise.
There are no elvens on this world, Mother, but there are beautiful forests, vast oceans, jungles, lakes, rivers, and mountains. There are two moons.
There are no other worlds with elvens besides this one, Mistress.
The old fossil guessed my next question. I was about to ask him why our people were only on this planet, but my daughter interrupted.
This world will be perfect for us, Mother. I can even feel the location of the radicals. I like the one in the mountain range. Beneath the crags is a beautiful valley where we can build a home. It looks almost like the one where Relyara lives.
Fine. I didn't really care which world it was. I preferred a land with other elvens, but if this old piece of rock said that option was not available, I did not want to waste time agonizing over the circumstances. I just wanted to leave. "How do we get started?" I asked the ancient elven man.
"The human has already connected with the ovule. She can tell it that she wishes to travel there, and then lay upon one of the plumule. Then the radical will take her to the world."
The man pointed into the other room at the stone beds arranged in the center of the circular chamber. "Does the ovule come with us?" I asked. My attention focused on Vyarathi. She had her eyes closed while she grasped the orb. The glow from the lines and dots on the wall pulsed as if they were alive, and I began to feel uneasy.
"No, single born. It will stay here for the next one who wishes to travel. If you have another in your possession, it can be carried with you. But the one used to power the radical must remain here."
"It won't work," Vyarathi said suddenly, and we both turned to her. "What do you mean?" I asked the girl, and my stomach tightened.
"It can only send one of us. It doesn't have enough power."
"Is this true?" I almost screeched at the old man.
"No, no."
Confusion was plain on his face, and his jaw trembled slightly.
"It should be able to send many humans or elvens."
"Touch it."
Vyarathi's green eyes watched the elven as he hesitantly reached out to feel the surface of the device.
"Oh, I see,"
he said after a few minutes. Then he shook his head and removed his hand from the smooth surface of the orb. "What do you see? Why won't it work?" I almost screamed through my clenched teeth. We had come this far and endured so many trials. I should never have allowed myself to believe it was almost over.
"You will need another ovule, one for each of you. After you use the radical, the ovule will be empty of power."
"But you said this could send many people," I growled, and Vyarathi laid her hand on my arm. I shrugged it off and thought about ripping the limbs off of the old elven.
"It can, but the ovule has shown me the truth, mistress."
He kneeled down in front of me and placed his head on the ground. The movement was slow. Every joint in his body creaked in protest.
"You could travel without the ovule. But if you wish to use the device, you will need one for each of you. Those are the rules you made for the radical."
"What in the name of the dead gods are you talking about, asshole?" I wanted to stomp on the fool's head. "Mother, please." Vyarathi pulled on my arm and probably saved the old bastard's pathetic life.
"We just need to find another ovule, then we can return here and leave together. Do Obarni have some?"
"Vyarathi believes they do." I nudged the crumpled man at my feet with a booted toe. "You said something about traveling without the ovule. What do you mean?"
"You can do whatever you wish. I am your servant, and I am sorry for what we did to you, great one. Please forgive us all."
His voice became a moan, and then it changed pitch, and it almost sounded as if he were singing a song. "No, stop. Shut your fucking face." I ripped the man off the ground and held him in the air by his fragile throat. He had only sung a few measures of the song, but I felt it continue to echo through my entire body. It felt as if I had heard the words before, but when my mind repeated them, they sounded alien and my head began to ache. "Look at me." His eyes were rolling back in his gray sockets, and then they seemed to focus on my face. "You said I could use the radical without the ovule. Tell me how, now."
"I don't understand, mistress. Please forgive me."
He choked out the words while tears rolled down his face like rain, and I set him down with a sigh and turned to my daughter. "You will go through first. Then I will find another ovule and return."
"No, we can go together to find another."
She shook her head and her lips folded. "It is too dangerous. They will kill us if we are caught."
"We won't be caught, though, Mother. We've escaped them for a dozen years."
There was a glassy sheen to her eyes, and I knew she was close to crying. "We ran and hid from them. Now I will have to go into one of their cities." You will journey through the radicle, and I will meet you on the other side once I've retrieved another ovule. My heart was hammering in my chest.
I can just wait here for you, or maybe go back to Reliadra's Valley if you are worried about them catching me.
No, they are close to us now. We need to keep moving forward. I reached out.